So I think the success we've seen, and I'd be interested to hear Austin talk about this more because I haven't had a briefing lately. The phenomena we discovered was we started eating through that list so that we weren't just taking people and moving them away. We were actually giving them the tools to get a job, get a house, and move away, and then getting through and actually fixing people and permanently changing the direction of people's lives. The effect that we liked was dropping the crime rate and not just moving it to somebody else's community.
So I apologize. I have to go. I very much appreciate the dialogue, and I support the approach. And I will simply leave you with, I've heard from a number of people on this issue, and among the most compelling testimonials I've received are from people who live in the impact areas who are dealing with issues of recovery. Mm-hmm. And frankly, if we are serious about helping people kick their addiction and we're creating a safe place, we cannot have at the same time sanction people coming in and engaging in behavior which people are trying to kick and get away from. And it just seems anomalous. We wouldn't let certain kinds of convicted criminals to be within close proximity, let's say, to a daycare center.
Absolutely.
And it's, I think, analogous. So I appreciate the creativity of the approach, but I won't be here for the vote. I apologize.
Thank you.
I would like to finish my questions.
Yes.
Thank you.
Commissioner Fritz.
That's very kind of you. So this is moving forward. It's not based on past convictions. So if somebody would have to be rearrested, reconvicted, and then the judge would set the exclusion rules, the stay away rules.
As a condition of probation.
So it's not that we've seen you here 20 times before. If you haven't actually had that as a condition of probation, it doesn't count.
Once they come in front of a judge, the judge would impose the sanction if they saw fit and if the defendant was amenable to it.
And how will we know what the sanctions are? We had a lot of discussion about for the gun-free zones. How will we know what kinds of standards will be imposed?
Well, the district attorney's office will impose the standards that they've done in the past. This new DA will actually take, there are certain cases right now that go to community court, low-level possession, a crack pipe, small amounts, that right now go to community court and get a $50 fine. So those individuals that are in that group will now be prosecuted for the crime and be put on probation. Those crimes like that are generally not going to result in penitentiary. They're going to be probation cases. So we'll have more people on probation that are possessors, that are drug addicts, offenders. But other than that, the conditions really markedly aren't going to change other than there will be this request for the stay-away order.
And they'll be individualized so that if a person is in a treatment program that happens to be in the area, then they'll get to continue to
yes.
go to day
treatment. Every sentence will be individualized. If a person has
rather
10 offenses, the judge may be more inclined to put them in jail or a more heavier sanction. But the DA's office has a set protocol for their pretrial offers. We're just going to add one more condition for people that commit drug, meth, crack, heroin-type crimes.
And I heard you say that we currently have capacity. We have treatment beds which are not being filled.
Correct.
So somebody could come up to an officer and say, I'd like to go into a treatment bed tonight.
I'd let Austin Raglione speak directly to that. The treatment beds are probably full tonight, but people are constantly, as Floyd experienced, they go through treatment, they drop out. When we find them and they're violating their probation or parole, we take them into custody, get them clean and sober, back into treatment. And that actually works, that cycling through people from jail to treatment. And when they fall off the wagon back in, we do have capacity, if the treatment beds are full, for outpatient treatment through VOA and supportive housing through Central City Concern. So if a treatment bed isn't open, we can get somebody into supportive housing and outpatient care until a treatment bed opens.
And what I'm hearing and what I remember from the last budget is we're now prioritizing funding the treatment beds rather than the jail beds. We're not currently funding jail beds, and this doesn't fund
Correct.
Any jail beds.
No.
It funds the reestablishment of a walking beat. Does that mean more officers, or what does that mean?
In the past, we had two officers 7 days a week, 6 to 8 hours a day walking in these impacted areas. The council funded that for 2 years. It was very successful. Again, it's part of holding people accountable, identifying the people that are causing the most problems and getting them into treatment, or if they're drug dealers, into prison. Because some of these folks that are dealing crack cocaine, quite honestly, are making a living off the backs of addicts, and they're gang members that should be in prison.
But so what is it funding, though?
The walking beat whole is funding overtime for officers to be on a walking beat in these impacted areas.
So when we get back into the budget, I'd like to know the cost effectiveness of overtime versus actually adding staff on that. Now, my final question is probably for somebody other than this panel, and that is how much do we have left in our contingency? So I'll look to find that answer before the end of the hearing. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I would just add one interesting thing. We have to put on my clean and safe hat for just a moment. The first 2 years of the program, actually Clean and Safe put $250,000 into buying the beds because the city at that point hadn't embraced the concept, and the board for Clean and Safe loved it. And of course, then the city began funding it at the $2 million mark about 4 years ago. So
we have 27 people signed up, which is a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
If you could stick around, and Austin, if you could stick around in case there are questions after, but I want to try to get people up to testify, and if they need to leave, they can. Carla.
The first three, please come on up, are Wade Varner, Jason Kirsten, and Ryan. Sorry, I can't read the last name. And they'll be followed by O'Callaghan, Trillium Shannon, and Ibrahim Mubarak.
Hi, welcome to the City Council. Please take a seat.
Ryan.
No problem. Who is the third
one? Wade, Jason, and Ryan.
Wade, Jason, or Ryan here?
How about Mike O'Callaghan?
Mike O'Callaghan.
How about Trillium Shannon? Okay.
We know you're here.
And it's Ibrahim Mubarak, Lisa Fay, and Dan Handelman next.
So all you need to do is give us your first and last name, and that clock will help you count down 2 minutes.
Okay, my first name is Wade Varner. I'm the director, founding director of Homeless Against Homelessness in America, or HAHA, as we're known to our friends. I've sat here all day since 8:30 this morning listening to all this stuff, and I'm shocked at how much money has gone into the enforcement side of Clean and Safe when... you know, I just putting these figures through my head, we have approximately 2,000 to 3,000 homeless in this thing, and I'm putting these figures through my head, and the Veterans Department pays $450 of my rent. So if that's average, just two or three of the officers that are in Clean and Safe could darn near put the entire homeless population of Portland in beds, where we could use the shelter system, what it's for inebriated people, for people that are fresh onto the streets, for people that need treatment and stuff like this. The idea that we're going to have a drug-free zone, I hear everybody talking about, yeah, we're going to do this, we're going to do this. Why do we need a drug-free zone if we have that then? If we have walking officers, if we have people doing this, you could split it up by letting the clean and safe armed officers do the daytime patrolling there and let the police do the nighttime when it's more dangerous. I mean, I've had people say that they're not going to go into that neighborhood because it's too damn dangerous. And we're talking about the police. Okay? These are the police that are saying this. I was attacked last June and again 2 months later by the same two guys that I've identified to the police and everything else, and still nobody's in jail. That's the kind of enforcement that we need. We don't need a drug-free zone. We don't need a prostitution-free zone. We need people that are paid by the city to do the job that they're paid to do. And if we have to hire more people, do it. But why are we throwing our money away with officers and stuff like this in Clean and Safe when they have no authority at all for arrest or anything else? All they can do is call the regular police. Why are we paying them $40,000 a year to be an armed police officer to do that when we could spend a little more? It costs 27 cents more a day to keep a person in permanent housing than it does to put them in the shelters. Why are we wasting our money year after year? Because I was part of Bud Clark's first homeless project.
Thank you. Sir.
My name is Jason Kirsten. I'm the executive director for HAHA. I'm like Floyd, you know. I'm one of the stories that, thankfully, treatment has helped. But like so many others have said, you know, treatment can't be forced upon somebody like some of us that are on parole, where we get that drug package, and it says, if you don't do this, you're going back to jail. Isn't that the same? And like I was just speaking with Commander Jarmer a few minutes ago, we go into the system, we go in there and we fill a kite out to say, hey, I want to talk to an AED counselor. That process can take anywhere from 14 to 45 days. Isn't that the same as housing somebody that has yet to be charged with that? Or, well, convicted of it, if they're still waiting? You know, and I want to see more programs like VOA, you know, but I was able to do it on my own free will. My PO didn't say, this is what you need to do or else. It was, as long as we force people to do things, as we all know, because we've all done it, when someone prods us, we're going to go the opposite direction. But when we're given the opportunity and we have people out here that can help lead us in the right direction, that's where people like myself can stand up and finally give credit to the system. But like Wade here said, in a way, our system's failing us. So I guess the question I need to pose to y'all is, how do we fix it? Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
Really treatment on demand is what we're talking about.
Hi, how are you?
Hi there. Ooh, wow. Hey, just a commentary. You all do seem to have a very idealistic view of the justice system, and I would like you to keep that in mind. I don't know if any of you have used a public defender, but I doubt it. I also think it's safe to say that none of you have been the target of racial profiling. I have neither been the target of racial profiling, however, as a I've witnessed racial profiling, and in over a decade of producing programs for KBOO Community Radio, I've spoken to Portlanders who are targeted based on their race, and I'll add, class. I've talked with families and friends of people who lost their lives, with race and class being an undeniable motive in the trigger-happy response of the Portland police. Despite the perception of Portland as a progressive place, the City Council's approval of measures which criminalize people of color and poor folks in our city, that would be sit-lie ordinances, anti-camping bans, drug-free zones, etc., is nothing progressive. Passing laws that punish people who are already vulnerable does nothing to get at the root causes of drug use and vending or homelessness. The whole thing, innocent until proven guilty, doesn't really come into play when it's profiling. Our time and resources would be better spent on programs that eradicate poverty and provide opportunities for people to make choices. Removing barriers to housing and employment for people coming out of jails and prisons who are disproportionately people of color is one example of a concrete way to address this problem. 2 minutes is not enough time to voice more than a few objections. It just scratches the surface of this overarching problem, which is the creation of a criminal class in our city in order to serve the desires of business and middle and upper classes. I request that the City Council sit at the table with the affected communities, including members of groups like Oregon Action, Right to Survive, Portland Cop Watch, and Sisters of the Road, to name a few. The city government has an obligation to prioritize the lives of people who are living with the extreme inequities inherent in this system, and not only listening to the voices of those who can bring investment of dollars. We can only build a livable city if all people residing in our city are included in the creation of solutions. When can we meet with you?
Just give me your card or give me your phone number. I'm happy to meet with you. What would be your guess how much we spent on affordable housing and homeless services a year ago?
You told us, I think, the last time we were here to oppose the sidewalk management, the sit-and-lie ordinance.
Do you remember that amount?
Mayor Adams, I don't know the amount, but I can tell you affordable housing is not affordable for poor people. It's affordable for the middle class.
I would suggest look at the numbers and where we're putting.
What is affordable housing?
We're funding deeply affordable housing. Thank you for your testimony.
Okay. No answer.
Well, we just had a report on $1 million.
Yeah, you sat through the meeting.
Earlier this afternoon.
I sat through most of it. I had to go out and do a few things as well. But the point is, affordable housing for someone who makes what I make, your affordable housing is not affordable. For people who are homeless, affordable housing is not affordable.
Do you know that? Okay. Thank you.
$40,000 a year? Is that the income?
It's less than that. Thank you. It's $248,000 a year in just our own local money. And we subsidize most of our money. A significant amount of money goes to deeply affordable housing. Our focus is on 20% or less of MFI. Next three.
Are Ibrahim Mubarak, Lisa Fay, and Dan Handelman? Dan said, wait. Okay, how about Channy Geigel-Teller? And then we'll go with Rob Moody, Leo Rhodes, and then back to Dan.
Thanks for your patience. I really appreciate it. Today has been a very hectic day. Would you like to go first?
Yes, I'll go first since I'm the minority here. Can we have 3 minutes? Because the people before us had 3 minutes, and we knocked us down to 2.
You can have 3 minutes.
All right. Thank you, Mark. As a homeless advocate, I see a lot of things while I'm walking in the streets, and I came across this article. It says, in 1992, the Portland City Council instituted a trespassing ordinance called drug-free zones, which sought to break up entrenched visible marking for drugs in high-crime areas. If an individual was arrested for a drug crime, he would receive an exclusion, banning him from the neighborhood for 90 days. Under the drug-free zone policy, arrestees who reappear in the neighborhood of arrest were subject to immediately rearrest, having committed no crimes at the time, nor necessary having been convicted of an original crime. Now the city officials in Old Town, Chinatown Business Alliance calling the drug and prostitution exclusion. This, to me, is unconstitutional, profiling, and targeting. How can you exclude the public from public property? And if you do that, they get caught in that area of the drug exclusion zone. What happens if they live in that area? You create them to become homeless, and that's where my job gets busy, okay? Then I say profiling because I went to the Old Town, Chinatown meeting when they was drawing these guidelines. They said that all the African Americans come from the Northeast with drugs and guns downtown to sell drugs. To me, that's profiling because it's more than the African Americans downtown that's selling drugs. And I say targeting because they say they sell the drugs to the homeless people. I was talking with a group of people. We go under the bridge and talk to the homeless community that's sleeping in the bridges. And a guy walked up to me and asked me, did I have a 20 rock? And I said, why did you approach me? He wasn't homeless. So to that Grecian myth is wrong. And my concern is that that's going to create separatism. That's going to create an all-out attack on people that's poor, that have nowhere to go already. Some people self-medicate. All homeless people do not buy and sell drugs. All blacks, African Americans, do not sell drugs or in gangland activity. And my concern is if you really want to get the drugs out this community or out the city, don't allow it in the country. That's the only way. But you need to reword this. I'm for having drugs out the downtown area because it's destroyed family, destroyed the economic system, and it destroys that person. So I think it needs to be reworded and looked at and need to involve people like Floyd Pippen who've been there and know what to do and have a dialogue with people like that.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Hi, would you like to testify now?
Yes, just a second. My name is Lisa Fay. I'm with Right to Survive. The fact that you want to target me or use me as an excuse to rid the downtown areas, I find phenomenal. Vagabond, bum, tramp, homeless, whatever you choose to acknowledge people like myself. We are not all degenerates that aggressively panhandle, steal, buy, sell, or use drugs. Not because I chose to become unhoused, but the economy and poor planning on my part led me down this road. My clothes are clean. My hair is washed. I clean up after myself. I don't walk around in urine-soaked clothes. Giving you people reason to stick your nose in the air at me, walk with blinders on, or make you step over me. However, this isn't why I'm here. I'm here because this drug-free prostitution zone. I'm for cleaning up the drugs, removal of dealers, and arrest of individuals buying drugs. I object to targeting the homeless as a primary buyer and user in the downtown areas as an issue for this reinstatement. That I find disturbing. Objecting to assumptions that the Afro-American men from Northeast Portland come to Chinatown to sell their drugs to homeless is, to me, in simulation to saying the rest of the city doesn't have a drug problem. There aren't sellers of drugs by other races, whites, Hispanics, Asians, and the working people and the respectables and their teens are not housed. Would not ever think of such acts. A little insight. the respectables just find the idea of substance use a taboo topic amongst themselves, something swept under their vacuumed rugs. And excuses are made when it's in their home. It's unfortunate you don't have compiled statistics on trespassers, vandals, and thieves that have an income destroying property and stealing from businesses. This exclusion zone will reduce drugs in the excluded off areas, like downtown. However, as a rule of thumb, buyers and sellers, as long as there is a demand, will just move to another area. May I suggest your neighborhood? As a drug and alcohol-free, clean and concerned vagabond, tramp, bum, homeless woman, however you label me, who does not prostitute myself either, I would welcome the soft manicured grass and quiet of your front yard. Maybe I could enlighten you and the police by helping spot the drug users and dealers on your block, by your schools, and around the stores you frequent in suburbia. Thank you.
Thanks. Hi.
Hi. My name's Shani Geigley-Teller, and I'm with Sisters of the Road. I just have to start by saying that I really appreciate Trillium remembering that this happened once before. And again, we have to say we love affordable housing, like the more the merrier, but no matter what, we can never trade it for civil rights. That's really important.
I agree.
Thanks. So as we sit here talking about budgets and all that, you know, Sisters is going through the budget process, you're going through the budget process, we don't have a lot to look forward to right now across the country. What's looming ahead does not look good for most of us. Around the country, social service budgets that create safety nets to provide for citizens' most basic needs will be slashed or disappear completely. You know that. We know that during these dire times, every penny we spend counts in the lives of some of our most vulnerable community members. That's how we're coming to this issue today. Over the last couple of days and weeks at Sisters, we've had long, intense conversations, good relationship-building conversations with community partners, local businesses, people who may be most impacted by these new exclusion zones, which they are, as well as the mayor's office and the district attorney's office. It seems obvious to us and the larger community that this issue needs to be approached cautiously. We were told yesterday by Mayor Adams' office that the resolution today would get the ball rolling to provide $250,000 in funding for a criminal enforcement plan that is not yet finalized or generally understood by the DA's office. There's no like concrete information. I've called everyone in the city, I swear to God. It seems egregious to us that this council would move forward on a funding policy that has not yet shown us how it would create safer communities without repeating the gross racial inequity that its predecessor did just a few years ago. There are long waiting lists to get into housing and to treatment in this city. You can't just walk up to an officer and get into a bed, I promise you that. I would like to know if anyone, I would love to see more research done by this council into that. And please don't take a police officer's advice, whether they're the chief or not, about how addictions policy like actually works and runs every day in this city. Go to some of the experts that are pulling their hair. Talk to the case managers. Talk to the people trying to get into treatment. It's amazing that there would be empty beds within the service coordination team. There should never be empty beds, and it should never take an officer, a prosecutor, a defender, a judge, a probation officer, and guards to get those filled. Our neighbors deserve the medical help they need when they need it, and we know that these are medical, social, and economic systemic problems, not criminal justice issues. What is stopping us today from shifting this conversation? Could we start building and funding the kind of society we all want to see? Could we give that money to schools, community centers, medical centers, housing, and jobs? Yes, we could. We could. Wouldn't it be amazing to have a society where any citizen has the right to an education and a living wage job so that instead of selling a $20 crack rock in front of Cal Skates, he could walk inside and purchase an $80 sweatshirt? Let's just not talk. Let's make it happen. You've heard lots of people who want to be at the table with you today, and we've felt excluded from this process, and it's not going to work for us. And apparently there's conversations that have already happened that there are certain folks who do similar work to us that are already on committees on this. I heard that earlier. Doreen Binder said thanks for being.
That's actually on the creation committee for the Office of Equity.
No, she's talking about the sidewalk.
Well, that, so she comes, Shannon comes to the sidewalks committee, but that was what Doreen was referring to.
All right, that's good to know.
There's lots of committees.
Thank you.
You do come to the sidewalks committee, and I appreciate that you do that.
Yeah. Thanks for your testimony.
Next three are Rob Moody, Leo Rhodes, and I believe it's Perry Wright from from Dignity Village. Thanks. And they'll be followed by Veronica Bernier and Howard Weiner.
Thanks for waiting. We really appreciate your patience. Who would like to go first?
I guess I'll go first, Mr. Adams, Mayor Adams. You know, I had outlined a number of different things that I wanted to say, but I realize there's kind of time constraints at this point. I think a lot of people have addressed the things about civil rights being violated here. I think a lot of people have addressed the concept of treatment. And the truth is, only those who want to be treated can be treated. The other truth is, a lot of these people suffer from mental illness who will be in this net. And the other truth is, a lot of these people are young people. And a criminal record is a black eye. I mean, it is a very big black eye, okay? I'm 38 years old. I live with stuff I did 10 years ago that still I can't get jobs because of it, okay? So that alone is one of my oppositions to why, you know, I don't want people arrested for, you know, for something small and something that they may regret later greatly. My other thing is, as far as the money allocated to this, you know, I think the money could be used for other things. Like, say, instead of enforcement and prosecution, maybe opportunities like jobs, mental health care, and a chance for people to at least feel like they're equal with other peoples in their community, to feel like they're equal with you, sir, and equal with her, and equal with everyone else in this room. And that's all I have to say.
Thanks for your testimony. I appreciate it. Hi.
Hi, I'm Terry Light. And I have to address the racism that I see. Just in this courtroom here, and people who hold power, how many are people of color? And we had one person who was a victim here, the one black person who was brought to testimony here, besides Ibrahim. And I don't know what racism feels like. I'm a white person. But I know that classism and feeling what shunning feels like, I know what that feels like. I know what it is to be a minority, and people look at me for who I love. I know if some people have that feeling, understanding. That's real pain, to be shunned by the community. Real pain. And we talk about drug abuse. I'm really sick and tired of policing here and not looking at the roots. We have to go do a whole community heart-searching to find what those roots are. Going and finding and policing people and giving them a record and a black eye, that's a power play. And when I just heard you talk to Trillium here about finding a number, I'm remembering my father, an alcoholic, wanting to give details, and I'm going to give him details. I'm a legal, and I'm going to be logical with him. And he's going to win every time because he holds the power. And it's about rationalization and legalism. It has nothing to do with feelings. Feelings cause pain. Feelings cause drug abuse. Feelings cause also violence in the streets because people don't know how to communicate. We live in a society that communication is not happening. How are you going to address that problem of communication? That's a big deal. And I see here, Leo is reminding me here, we live on land where people have been murdered. We live on land where people used to know how to live peaceably. And there were fish, and there were birds, and there were trees, and we knew how to grow anything. How many people here know how to grow something and survive if this whole economic thing goes down? But here is this whole process. I want to remind you that we are white, and think about that. Try to think what it's like if you're not a person who's white, and you get profiled, and you get a black eye, and you appear on the mission walking around. There's classism, there's history here, and there's a white European history that got brought here with its poisons, and this is what we're looking at. How are we going to address it? Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. Hi, welcome back.
Hi, yeah. Thank you. Yeah, my name is Leo Rhodes, and I'm a homeless advocate, as you know. sorry, I am a little bit disturbed, not only by this, but I also just came back from the memorial service of all these homeless individuals that just died last year. When we talk about money, talking about this $250,000 that's going towards, you know, people walking around, drug dealing and all this other stuff, that is needed, yes. But, you know, to me, life is more important than that. Housing, getting people inside. We as homeless people are concerned about it also. You know, it affects us too. So that's why we're up here talking about helping, you know, helping out on this. Racism, yes, it is here and it is, you know, everywhere. But what the racism that I see is within the police department, meaning that I am clean and sober. I have told you that every time I came on up here. But every time I talk to a cop, he always asks me if I have any alcohol on me. Now, I'm clean and sober, even though I tell him that. He still questions whether I have it or not. When I finish my talks with them and I ask them why they ask that, they always tell me I have to put you in the same pot. Every homeless individual has to be put in that same pot. So we're not individuals out there. We're all victims out there of this, of what the police and look at us, how they deal with us. We're all criminals. We're all alcoholics. We're all druggies. No, we're not. There are some that are trying to get on off the streets that are working on out there. But with these kind of laws, these kind of exclusions, we are being harassed too. Yes, we do sympathize for the business people out there. But you got to remember, we're victims out there too. This does happen, and it does affect us too. And we do want to help. We do want to be at the table. We do want to say, explain what's going on, how we can help. With the minorities also, you know, just like I had said before, when I brought this issue on up, is it because I'm homeless or is it because I'm Native American that they ask if I have alcohol with me? So that's what I want to say is that, you know, yes, the money, this is needed, but housing, shelters, we need to get people off the streets. People should be prior to this. And if you do, there will be a stronger community out there. And let's work together. Let's not have this us and them kind of thing, which it kind of seems like what we're going towards right now when we're not invited at the table to sit down as minorities, as individuals, as somebody that is affected in the community.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony.
The next three are, Veronica Bernier here still? Okay. The next three are Howard Weiner, Marvin Mitchell, and Gary Cobb. And they'll be followed by J.R. Baker, Judy Van Alstine, and Jamie Dunn.
Thanks for your patience. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for yours.
Who would like to begin?
Howard does.
Oh, thanks. My name's Howard Weiner. I'm here today in my role as chair and founder of the Public Safety and Livability Committee in Old Town Chinatown. Spent the last 27 years in Old Town Chinatown. I've seen all the changes that have occurred. I've seen all the good work that's been done by the faith-based and the non-faith-based social services. And I've also been a leader that's tried to bring people together from all constituencies. The issue before us today, I don't really think has been spoken to. We've heard everything else, but quite frankly, what we're talking about is the brazen drug dealing in Old Town Chinatown. It's as simple as that. And the folks who brought up this issue are the folks, for the most part, who live 24/7. I go home. I am a business owner. But the folks who live in that neighborhood were the ones that started coming to our committee, started voicing their concerns, started asking for leadership, and what could we do to break the back of this insidious crack cocaine that has invaded our neighborhood and folks in it for many years. Folks in recovery, and you'll hear from some of them today, have been some of the loudest voices to come. It has not been led by the business community. I want to make that sure. We have been at that table, and yes, we voiced our concern. It really started with this particular effort with the stabbing and the death of an individual 50 feet from my store. And although I can't say 100% sure, I believe it was drug-related. It was 5:30 in the morning.
We've asked for relief. The mayor has taken leadership in this matter. This is only one part of really the recommendations that we've made as a community, but we need help. And the idea of a drug-free zone, even though we put that out, it was really the hook for the discussion. In the end, what we really wanted was to have something fair, something based on convictions, and something that really the community could buy in. So I know you have a lot of other folks, but I just want you to know we're very thankful for all the efforts from all of you, and I know that you know the situation in Old Town, and you'll give us some relief.
Thank you for clarifying that. That's where this request came from.
Oh, yes.
I'm Marvin Mitchell, Executive Director of Julie Westhouse. Thank you for this opportunity to speak. I support this proposal because we work with many people in recovery. We've seen some amazing transformations. We've also seen many people start down the road to recovery, then fall back into usage and addiction. Recovery is a roller coaster ride at best. People in recovery are fragile. It's very difficult to sustain a change in lifestyle when you're constantly assaulted by people on the street offering, urging, even insisting that you take the substances they are merchandising. We've learned the very small things can trigger relapse for a recovering addict. We had a staff member, a former longshoreman, a rugged guy who can withstand a lot, who was recovering from a 20-year heroin habit. He has turned his life around. One day, he and I came upon two young men sitting on the bench on Morrison Street between 12th and 13th, the north side of the street. This is alongside the westbound Max tracks and just outside a wrought iron fence enclosing a play area for the daycare center at First Presbyterian Church. One of the guys was sticking a syringe in the neck of his friend. This was in broad daylight, right in the middle of the day. Things are that far out of control with drugs in downtown Portland. Coming on that out in the open shoot-up really impacted Troy. He had been successfully dealing with living in clean and sober housing that wasn't clean and sober. Shortly after the Morrison Street incident, he resigned. He's moved on, he's still taking care of himself, and he's continuing recovery. But we lost a good staff member as a result of witnessing that shoot-up done right out in the open in broad daylight. We have lots more examples of drug dealing in use on the sidewalks around our area in the West End. We think this proposal to add a dedicated ADA and restore the walking beat program is a critical for everyone. The treatment option to V of A provides a healthy path for those that are apparently lost and without hope. This proposal will improve livability and safety in our city for everyone. We rejoice when any of our friends work to free themselves from addiction, not using every tool we have to discourage open sales, solicitation, and usage is neither reasonable nor responsible. We support policies that focus on our guests and their potential rather than policies that allow them to be exploited based on their addictions or vulnerabilities. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, council members. My name is Gary Cobb. I'm the community outreach coordinator at Central City Concern. I want to kind of start off by a little rule of thumb here that we should follow. The disease of addiction does not discriminate. Our approaches to helping folks in their addiction should not be discriminatory in any manner whatsoever. And I want to, you know, I heard a lot of great things here today. And, you know, I've been in recovery of addiction for over 10 years. Along with that was a long, long, hard, bad life of criminal activity. And, you know, I would like to introduce right now to the council, you mentioned something about the residents who live in a recovery-based housing down at the corner of 6th and Everett at the Sally McCracken. I want to make sure that this petition, there's about 30 folks here who can join us today. However, I've brought a handful of folks who, you know, kind of support what these residents feel in living in an environment that is pretty detrimental to their day-to-day activities as men and women in recovery. And it's pretty clear to us that, we all are in this thing together. And a couple of things that is clear is that, you know, no matter you look at it, drug addiction, drug activity, criminal behavior that supports that is not cool. It kills people. And, you know, what is cool is actually trying to work as neighbors in this and trying to find a solution. And that so folks that have experienced that, all that behavior, like us here, can turn this around. And we know it can happen. I know it's an interesting thing how budgets look and how budgets work, and it isn't as what it seems. So I appreciate the amount of money being put to this. Central City Concern endorses this resolution as is. I support it as a member in the community, and so do the residents of the Sally McCracken building.
Thank you. Welcome. And congratulations, and thank you for your great work and recovery. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
I just want to thank you for taking the time to be here all afternoon and for the petition that you sent in. And it is evidence that this is about all of us. This is not about us and them. This is about taking care of and protecting everybody who lives downtown, whether you live inside, outside, in recovery, wherever. It's about following the laws and also providing treatment. So it's not an either or. And so thank you so much for coming down. Thanks, Gary, for your leadership.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Next three are J.R. Baker, Judy Van Alstein, and Jamie Dunn.
Thank you for your patience. We appreciate it.
What about person? Steve Trujillo?
Steve is right there.
And they'll be followed by Shane Abma, Dave Williams, and Jan Oliver.
Would you like to begin, ma'am?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and council members. My name is Judy Van Alstein. I am the vice co-chair of the Public Safety Action Committee in downtown and Old Town, and I also sit on the Old Town Neighborhood Association Board. But today, I'm here representing Bill NATO Company and the 70 businesses that we have in our properties in the Old Town area. I have to tell you that this is not the first meeting I've been to of this kind. I've sat through Austin's graduations, and they are truly some of the most beautiful things I've seen. It's very touching. But today I'm here as a business owner representing the tenants and the businesses that are in our property. And the success of my job depends upon how we lease the properties in Old Town. We are landlords of historic buildings. We offer creative space, brick walls, a bring-your-bike-to-work attitude, bring-your-dog-to-work attitude, and it certainly is creative space in Old Town. But none of these amenities mean a thing if people feel that their safety is in jeopardy. During the last 6 months, drug dealing, drug use, crack alley, harassment, and danger are the words that have crept into our tenants' vocabulary. This concerns us. Week before last, a broker toured a space with a potential tenant. While in the hall, the potential tenant asked a passerby if he was worried about the drug dealing going on in Old Town, as was reported in a local newspaper. Recently, an architect in Old Town emailed me and said that her employees are concerned about the drug dealing and harassment they were subjected to under the Burnside Bridge while walking to work. As a property manager, I've been dealing with the one feel-good attitude tenants had about this creative space, and now, these same tenants are worried about the safety that they're incurring. Mayor Adams, Bill NATO Company, support your illegal drug impact areas to reduce drug dealing. We are thrilled to see the possibility of a walking beat returning to the streets of Old Town and the addition of a full-time DA to assist the violators. The time is now. I commend you, your staff, the police bureau, for the quick response to this matter that was brought up a few months ago. Thank you.
Sure. My name is Jamie Dunn. I own Guilt Club on the corner of Broadway and Everett, and I am also a board member for the Pearl District Business Association, and I'm here representing this business association as well as my interest. Thank you for your time. Thank you very much, Commissioner Fritz, for the great dialogue that I've had with you since November or December, I believe, when I actually started this process. I'm not quite sure. I've heard an awful lot today from people, and I think that the perspective that I might be able to offer is simply one of the past 6 years and what I've experienced in the neighborhood and what I saw when I originally came into the neighborhood and what happened. And essentially that is when I first moved to Portland about 10 years ago, I came from Chicago. I recognized my location as, for lack of a better term, the 50-yard line with the expansion of the Pearl pushing east and the expansion of downtown pushing north. It was sort of a no-brainer for me. Particularly with the boutique hotel that never really materialized in the U.S. Customs House. I'm excited about Krem Group and the changes that are happening in the neighborhood. But, things were really positive and looking up when I moved into the neighborhood in 2005. I would have customers call me and say, is it safe to park down there? And I have to be honest with you, I laughed and we all had a good joke about the fact that we're on Broadway. Of course it's safe to park. It's downtown and it's well lit and there's no crime. And I'm not quite sure what the stigma is attached. Old Town certainly is colorful, but safety has never, ever been a concern. Unfortunately, about 6 to 8 months ago, I actually had employees come up to me, and for the first time in my business career of almost 15 years in Portland and in Chicago, I had employees come to me and tell me that they were afraid to go to their car at the end of the night. And I think part of that is that our hours are such that we serve the full dinner menu until 2 in the morning, so we have later hours, and we see a different perspective than maybe daytime people do in the neighborhood. But it was alarming to me, and as a result, I started paying attention and got involved and was real happy to find the response and see that city government was willing to engage in a dialogue, which means an awful lot. Recently, I've gone from having a neighborhood, bless you, that... safety was never an issue. A good example in broad daylight would be a week or two ago, I walked out my front door and walked around the corner, and the drug dealer was selling to the user, and the user was lighting up, and the drug dealer said to me, "You don't own the block." And other times we've had people arrested with shotguns in the neighborhood. So there's certainly some issues that have come up. I have to say that I fully support the IDIA initiative and the other programs that go along with it. And I would also point out, too, that and commend the city that on the two blocks to the north of me and the two blocks to the south of me with the Bud Clark Common and with the Central City building that's going up, that the city is committed and is absolutely taking care of the other ends of this issue, and I'm really excited to see some support behind the public safety issue that's taking place as well. So thank you again for your fast response, and thank you again for your dialogue. It really has been fulfilling to go through this process of government with.
I appreciate your constructive approach, too. What's the name of your business?
It's called Guilt Club, and we're on Broadway, and you're probably most familiar with us through our somewhat infamous chicken, Colin. Who's a happy little chicken. He was raised about 20 miles south.
Portland.
Well, I wanted to also comment that you and others have been extremely respectful of people who live outside in your neighborhood and recognizing that the challenges of safety are equally, or if not, they are worse for the folks who live outside. So responding to Ms. Fay's comments and others, that it is a shared concern of everybody's safety and not just the insiders or the outsiders.
And I would point out, too, that I own my house just a couple blocks from PCC Cascade campus. So when Old Town's all cleaned up, then I'm going to start focusing on my neighborhood in Jefferson as well. So I'm that's one of the things that I'm really excited about, is that this isn't just about Old Town. This is and something I didn't hear was that, the IDIA is statistically driven. So, it's about 82nd Avenue. I have a feeling that statistics-wise, it's also about the corner of Killingsworth and at PCC there as well. So to see the city take a holistic approach is really exciting for me as well, too.
Thank you.
So.
Thank you. Mr. Trujillo, sorry.
That's right.
Well, thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Steve Trujillo. I'm the lead pastor of Father's House City Ministry. It's a church that's devoted to serving downtown and the greater inner city neighborhoods. A week ago last Monday, I went to the bus station there on Gleason and 6th to help a young man get to his brother's funeral. As I crossed 6th and Gleason, a man came to me offering me drugs. I sort of said, no, thank you. He insisted. He followed me. He insisted several times he could get me anything. When he gave up, two more took his place. Within half a block, I was pursued by three drug dealers. That's right there in the gateway where transit brings in people to our city. That's, to me, it's unacceptable. It's sort of this reprehensible thing that has really taken hold of a neighborhood where drug dealers believe that they own it. They own the street, just like the gentleman just said. And I think just as has been so well said, this is really about protecting folks who are trying to recover. This, I've worked many years in that field myself, and it was really truly about bringing public safety to those who are the most vulnerable. It's not just the business folks, it's the folks working, it's the people who feel vulnerable, it's women, it's children, it's those that are using our streets here and wherever in our city these statistics go. So I want to thank you, because I know that, you know, churches and civic groups can do a great deal of work, but we cannot do public safety. That's government's job. And I want to thank the mayor, and I want to thank those that are supporting this initiative. I really think going forward is going to be it sort of skips and it bypasses all the missteps of drug-free zones, and I think it really does it in a way that's dignified, in a way that works, and a way that I think goes along with our laws in our nation. And I want to thank you for supporting this, Mayor, and to those that I hope will vote yes. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. And again, thanks for your patience.
Next are Shane Abma, Dave Williams, and Jan Oliver.
And then how many more do we have after that?
One more, Suzanne Hayden.
Suzanne, do you want to go ahead and come up? Okay. We'll move the...
Shane Abma with the Portland Business Alliance. I'm going to toss my prepared remarks in the interest of time and simply say that the word I've heard the most in the last couple of months when we're talking about drugs downtown is brazen. Brazen. And as we've heard a lot of the testimony today, the other term that I hear, broad daylight. We do have a real problem downtown with drugs right now. And so I'll just say that the Portland Business Alliance strongly supports this resolution in all aspects.
Once again, hello, my name is Dave Williams, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. I have a couple hats on again today, this afternoon. One is a Citizens Crime Commission board member and also, of course, the vice chair of the Clean and Safe group. I don't want to extend the comments much further than to say that we truly support the notion of this initiative. It isn't just, as Commissioner Fritz said, it's not an either-or. It really is a combination of multiple tools that need to be in the toolbox that are appropriate, that really hold people accountable, and ultimately is supported with lots of services that is also appropriate. So I think just on behalf of those two groups that I represent there, I should also say that I represent myself as a downtown liver and a person that works in the Old Town at Northwest Natural in our headquartered office there. And so I also care about it personally. And so I completely support the notion that you would also support the initiative. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. Suzanne Hayden. I'm the Executive Director of the Citizens Crime Commission. And the Crime Commission supports the city's efforts and the police chief's efforts to respond to the crime trends in Old Town and Chinatown particularly. The Citizens Crime Commission and the Portland Business Alliance, along with the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, hosted a Portland Business Safety Summit in February, and 50 to 60 business owners and managers came to that and did a little round table. And at that time, the overwhelming comments had to do with some really heartbreaking personal observations of drug dealing in their place of business, right outside their place of business, and affecting their employees. And those comments were repeated here today. Same type of thing. So we really applaud the efforts to rapidly respond to this issue. And funding of the deputy district attorney position is really crucial, because that's a key part of it that the district attorney's office has taken some major hits in their budget. And so we really applaud the efforts of the city and the county to work on these kind of collaborative efforts and to provide cover for both the residents and business people in the affected areas and the people in recovery. So thank you very much for allowing us to weigh in on this.
Thanks for waiting.
Again, thanks for your patience today. Really appreciate it. All right. That gets us to, unless there's additional discussion with staff, that gets us to a vote. Cara, can you please call the vote?
In spite of what some testified to, this is not a drug-free zone ordinance or anything like that. As I said earlier, and at the risk of repeating myself, I have never voted for one of those. I don't find them effective for the people involved or for the communities involved, because it displaces a problem from one community to another. What this program does is, I'll give you an example. If somebody buys or sells drugs, they will get arrested. If they get arrested, they will go to jail. Once they're in jail, they will have all the constitutional rights afforded to one that has been charged with a crime, and they can choose to either plead guilty or not guilty. If they choose to plead not guilty, they can go before a judge or a jury of their peers and have a trial. If they are found guilty, the judge, well, if they don't send the person to jail or prison for being convicted for that crime, put the person on probation with some conditions of probation. It's a very common thing to have happen. And one of those conditions could include participating in a drug and alcohol treatment program and from staying away from where drug dealers are at. Very common thing. Some have testified, yeah, but you can't make people go into treatment. Well, while it's true there are many people who go into substance abuse treatment programs voluntarily and succeed, it is just as true that there are many people who go into drug treatment programs who chose to go into drug treatment over going to prison or jail. So the person that's in that position actually has a choice, and it's been given to them time and again in the programs we described earlier. You can stay in jail and fulfill your sentence, or you can come out and go into treatment. We have observed a high success rate for people in that category who actually are motivated to go into treatment to stay out of jail. And once they find the benefits of not using drugs or alcohol, or have prescribed to them what oftentimes is an underlying mental illness that they use drugs and alcohol to treat, once they actually get the proper prescription drugs, what we've seen and heard from people here today is their lives have turned around. Instead of their lives being defined by their addictions or mental illnesses, they get to define their future for themselves. And that's what we've seen over and over again. That's the program Austin leads. That's a program that I helped initiate here in the city that works very well. That's what this measure that the mayor is bringing forward funds to do. And I am tremendously supportive of it. I greatly appreciate the mayor's leadership in bringing this forward and the community that has testified in support of it. Aye.
Fritz. Well, thank you for explaining it so carefully, Commissioner Leonard. This is about safety for everybody, and it's about rights for everybody, and it's about drugs not being good things for anybody. I was a psychiatric nurse for 26 years and worked at OHSU for 22, and saw the devastation of people's lives and heard their stories. And then it's wonderful to hear the story of Floyd and others today who have successfully overcome drug addictions, and I'm proud that we're funding services. And we're not... This is one piece of the puzzle. We are funding mental health care for the county. We're funding the DA in this ordinance for the county. We're working with Project Respond to add more people who can respond to people needing care. Commander Jarmer has done an amazing job with our Sidewalks Committee. And it's a compassionate, holistic approach. I know that's hard to believe, but That's how I see it, and that's how many people are experiencing it. I want to thank Antoinette Edwards and Amrit Sandhu in the mayor's office and Mike Boyer in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement for his ongoing work with downtown neighborhood associations and in creating community. And indeed, thanks to Sisters of the Road for their part in creating community in Fahaha and all the other work that's being done. We're all in this together. And this is going to fund the piece that will take the people who are providing drugs to people trying to stay clean and sober off the streets and give them other alternatives. And so I support it. I'm grateful that the details will be worked out by the judge, which is how I believe it should be worked out. And so in that case, if the judge feels that the person should be excluded from the entire city of Portland, they can do that. And I encourage them to look at the particular I like the fact